Welcome back to The Unraveling. We are exploring weird things that seem to be true. We're going to continue our exploration of staring at anomalies today with the number 34%. Now, before I get into all this, just a really quick disclaimer. Don't watch this channel if you don't, like, want your mind blown or your world shaken. That sounds like a sort of sensational clickbait thing to say, but I mean this sincerely. This video, and many of the videos that I will do, you're getting a warning about ontological shock. This has had a profound effect on my life and how I see the world. And, you know, change is not always positive. It's often uncomfortable. So just consider this your warning. If you're just sort of bumbling into this and you don't really want your world shaken, you should not watch this. Otherwise, let's continue. As always, this is framed for the skeptic or for somebody who's completely new to the topics. We're going to make a number of seemingly sensational claims, and I'm going to walk you through step by step how I came to believe certain claims so that you can make up your own mind. You can investigate my evidence, look through the sources, do your own research, but ultimately just look through the evidence I provided and come to your own conclusion. I will never tell you what to think. Make up your own mind. And I'm going to show you how I've made up mine. Save you a lot of time doing your own research. All right. So let's talk about the number 34%. Let's play out a hypothetical. If you have four quarters. Ooh. Don't cheat. You've got four quarters. All right. Let's say the red is heads. Sorry. You got one quarter. Red is heads, blue is tails. Right? Heads, tails. If you flip it 100 times, on average, you would expect to get around 50 heads, 50 tails, right? 50-50. You do it an infinite number of times, it's going to average out to 50%, 50%. Now, let's say you have two quarters, you know, and you do the same thing. What odds would you expect to get the different combinations, right? You've got heads, heads. You've got heads, tails. Do-do-do-do-do. Tails, heads. I'm just going to copy that without reversing the order. And then, of course, heads, heads, right? Those are the only four combinations. So a little basic statistics here. If I were to ask you to guess before flipping the coins, which one of these four outcomes you would get, one, two, three, and four. How often would you get the right answer? This is not a trick question. Pretty simple. You would expect to get the right answer about 25% of the time, just from random guessing. Cool. So I'm going to lay out these numbers for those with visuals. Yeah, 25, 25, 25. So, you know, you guess one of these four, you're going to get it right about 25% of the time. And that is exactly what we see. However, let's say if I made some changes to this. What if you practiced a lot? What if you studied? What if you worked out? What if you learned a lot about math? Or you're really good at gambling? How often would you still get 25, 25? How often would you get it right? You would still get it right 25% of the time. It's pretty much independent. As long as you're doing this fairly and you're not cheating, and you're measuring accurately and you do enough trials, because every now and then, you know, you're going to be more accurate than average because you go on a hot streak. But that's just chance, right? Overall, you do this enough times and you're not cheating, you're going to get it right 25% of the time. Four choices, one out of four, 25%. Now, let's say... Let's just all agree on that, right? If you don't agree on that, then it's going to be hard to do the rest. Let's say I were to put you in a soundproof room. We're going to make some modifications to the test, okay? I'm going to put you in a soundproof room. Now, instead of guessing coins, you're going to pick one of four videos. But ultimately, it's the same process, right? I'm putting you in a soundproof room. I am covering your eyes with ping pong balls. So the world, you can't really see anything. The entire world is sort of a blurry, fuzzy, yellowish white, orangish, yellowish white. So you can't see anything. It makes everything look the same. And we're putting noise-canceling headphones on your ears, and they're playing a binaural audio tone. So slightly different tones in each ear. Boo, boo. And that's it. So all you can hear is the sound. All you can see is sort of a warm blur. Okay, you can't feel anything. There's no vibrations. And now we have somebody in another room inside the same building who knows what the answer is going to be. Okay, they know ahead of time which of these it's going to be. It's not coin flips now, but it's one of four different videos. They were told by a computer which one. Totally random. Okay, but ultimately it's the same thing. You're guessing one of four things. And now, after a few minutes, you take off the ping pong balls, take off the headphones, you walk up, you look at the four videos, and you pick which of the four videos you think the correct answer is. And during that entire test, this other person, both of you are just totally average people, the other person is trying very hard to tell you the answer. They're trying to think it at you. They know which answer. It's B. It's B. The answer is B. It looks like this. It's got like this. They're trying their hardest to think anything and everything they can to tell you which one it is. How often do you get the answer right if you do this thousands of times? Well, you would expect 25%, but in reality, it turns out the answer is 34% of the time you get it right. Let's just sit with that for a second. So 34 minus 25 is 9, right? Where is this coming from? Where is that plus 9% coming from? It seems insignificant. Okay, big deal. I'm saying over thousands and thousands and thousands of attempts, it keeps coming out to about this number. Where is that extra 9% coming from? Every now and then you get it right more often than you would expect. At first, that doesn't seem like a big deal, but once you sit with it for a little bit, you realize how profound that is. Wait. What are we talking about here? What we're talking about for this entire video. Do-do-do-do-do. One moment as I pull up this. What we're talking about is telepathy. And the claim we're going to evaluate is telepathy exists and the average human can do it. Where telepathy, the definition, is communication over a distance from one mind to another. Right, so that's the definition. So that's what I mean when I say telepathy. That's the claim. And so that is one possible explanation for where that extra 9% comes from. How is it that we can guess the right answer out of four seemingly random choices an additional 9% of the time? How do we get thir how why are we right 34% of the time? That should be impossible. Because if it's not impossible, if it's really happening, it's incredibly profound. So we're going to try to answer, in addition to showing you how I came to believing in this claim. And again, I always believe based on evidence. I see evidence to the contrary. I'll change my mind again. We're going to try to answer three questions along the way. How is this possible? Hasn't this been debunked already? And what does this mean? Okay, what I'm saying. If true, what does it mean? What can we infer about how the universe works, or consciousness, or our minds, or anything? So you're either thinking this is stupid. This is your psychological immune system, if you're paying attention, or you're already exposed to weird ideas, you're just incredibly open-minded. The average skeptic, your psychological immune system is going, "This is stupid. This is wrong. There's no way." And the entire format of this show is to walk step by step by step, because this is where I started. Through all of the arguments, through all the scientific studies, through the analysis of them, through the follow-up studies. And we're going to watch some videos. And I promise if you stick around to the end, you are going to see this demonstrated live. Not by me. I'll show you a video of someone else. And it is, in my mind, incontrovertible, What is that? Is that the right word? Yeah, my vocabulary is not on trial here. Telepathy is on trial. My claim is that telepathy exists and the average human can do it. So let's take a look. All right. My notes up, so I'm not just saying random stuff. So, where does the claim come from? Well, the claim comes from the experiment I just talked about was the Ganzfeld tests. And the reason that you put the ping pong balls on and you have the headphones and all that is that they found that there's a stronger effect size. Like it, people are better once you've removed like outside stimulus and you can focus on, in theory, a signal that you're sensing or feeling, you know, subconsciously or just like in your mind, however it's happening. Removing external stimuli like sights, sounds has multiple purposes. For one, it removes doubt as to maybe this person is cheating or they're getting the information some other way. But it also, removing those stimuli does seem to improve the effects. So this is the reason they did it. There were series of, I mean, decades of telepathy tests before the Ganzfeld setup. But this is the most, this shows the strongest results, so it's the ones that people do. But they've used cards, they've used everything you can think of. So this has been going on for a long time. So that's the first thing is that there has been decades of telepathy tests, at least since the 1930s, most likely before even then. But those are not what we would say scientifically rigorous experiments. However, there has been a lot of scientifically rigorous experiments since then. So given that setup, let's take a look at some scientific results. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And we're going to start with this. Okay, so this is an article by Dean Radin talking about the state of telepathy research in 2003. And he says, as of late 2001, out of 2,878 test sessions reported from researchers in 15 different laboratories, the overall hit rate is 32%, with odds against chance greater than a trillion to one. So he's just sort of aggregating stuff. There's been a lot done since then, so these numbers go up. The original finding was 34%, which is the one I went with. There was another meta-analysis that came back and said, no, this is dumb. The hit rate's 25%. A group of people re-examined the meta-analysis and they incorporated new results as well. That hit rate went up to 28% instead of 25%, and then incorporating the results in between that meta-analysis, which is just looking at a bunch of different studies. That's how they got to 32%. Because the numbers are all over the place, I just went with the initial findings of 34%. And they ran that test exactly as I described. They just take a whole bunch of different people. They're often, as always, like undergraduates at universities. Here, all right, pick a video. They're told very little. So that's how the tests are run, and there has been lots of different changes over time, but that's where the initial claims from comes from. All right, so let's go update our claim. All right, so when choosing from four random videos, this is called a forced choice test. So we'll say telepathy forced choice, meaning you have to choose one of four different options. Show up to plus 9% hit rate greater than chance. Okay. And what else do we have? Meta-analysis shows p-value with odds against chance greater than 1 trillion to 1. All right, what does that all mean? All right, so let's take a look into all this. We're going to talk about the methods. Trust me, people have ripped this apart for decades. They hate this stuff. They hate it, they hate it, they hate it. Scientists hate it. It is stupid. It is the stupidest thing they've ever heard of. However, they have yet to put up a convincing fight. They think they have, We're going to talk about why the people doing these tests have bent over backwards exponentially to demonstrate the validity of their claims. All right, so that's the claim. So what are some reasonable responses to these claims? So let's scroll on over here to hasn't this been debunked? So those are the initial claims, right? You run the test, but science doesn't work like here it is, we did it once, now it's true. Like there's an iterative process, there's a back and forth. Well, did you consider that? Maybe you did this wrong. So we're going to take a pretty deep dive down into how do we know we can trust these results? And I promise towards the end, we're going to zoom back out again and we're going to look at more experiential claims. How can you see this in action? How would we know this was true? Let's look at like real world evidence, rather than just some numbers in a lab and statisticians arguing back and forth. How could we demonstrate this in everyday life that would, beyond a reasonable doubt, give you an intuitive sense that, holy crap, this is actually happening? All right, so the first thing we're going to talk about is, hasn't this been debunked? Okay, so we're gonna just go to the Ask Science Reddit here. Hey, hasn't feeling the future been debunked? This was an ESP test done by Daryl Bim. Up until this point, was a fairly well-regarded psychologist, and he decided to publish a paper on ESP, which of course is related to telepathy. The replies are basically, yes, this has been debunked. This is stupid. I'm not going to go through the rest of them, but the rest of the comments basically all say, yes, this is dumb. So let's go through some of the things that they're citing. I went through the links and I tried to come up with other, like, what is the mainstream take as to why this isn't true? And we're going to be rigorous here because that's what we do. So why is this not true? Okay. We got some studies showing that this is true. Why is this not true? All right. So the first one that is mentioned is this guy, Richard Wiseman. Him and somebody else publish a review of BIM's work, and they try to prove using statistics why this is not the case. That is later refuted, which, again, we just talked about in Dean Radin's article. You can go read it here, where he talks about how this is refuted, and you can go through statisticians arguing back and forth. So have fun with that. But instead of looking at that person's direct rebuttal, which is kind of boring, right? Let's take a look at the same person, Wiseman, and here's a more general paper that he wrote talking about why psychic abilities in general are stupid. Because, so let's look at this person's overall stance. Why does he think any of these phenomena are dumb? And I am making that claim as well. I'm not going to explore that claim as part of this video. But by proxy, if you consider telepathy to be a psychic ability, yeah, I'm saying psychic abilities are real. Trust me, this was as stupid as. Reality is weird. We're going to get into what does it mean. So we're not going to comb through all this, but this guy basically talks about why even the very belief in a psychic ability is stupid. Okay. So let's go write that down. Wiseman says any belief. And we're going to shorthand this to psi, which is what most people do. If you're cool, you want to be cool, right? Right? We'll say unfounded, right? Is unfounded. Okay, any belief in psi is unfounded. And we're going to, so this claim. Paraphrased from Richard Wiseman. Right. So rather than reading through all of his claims, we're obviously just going to get ChatGPT to do it. So I had to just extract all the main points. And let's see what they had to say. Again, you want to deep dive into this paper and read it yourself, you go right ahead. I understand how hallucination works in large language models. So, but let's just take it at face value and assume that it can extract summaries. So what is this guy saying? His main points are: the misattribution hypothesis has four pieces. All right. There are four reasons why people believe in psychic abilities, and he's saying that if you can undermine, more or less, he's implying, if you can undermine all four reasons that people believe that this is a thing at all, then you've more or less demonstrated that it's dumb to believe in this. All right, so what are those four reasons? The misattribution hypothesis has four pieces. One, general cognitive ability. Two, probability misjudgment. These are explanations for why people believe in psychic powers. Three, propensity to find correspondences in distantly related material. And four, fantasy proneness. Okay, so let's do a quick translation for you from sort of a hard-nosed skeptic. I don't think he's actually a skeptic. That term has been co-opted. What is he actually saying here? General cognitive ability. Translation: people are dumb. You're dumb. If you believe this, probability misjudgment, you're bad at math. Three, propensity to find correlations in distantly related material, you'll find patterns in anything. Four, fantasy proneness, you just make stuff up because you want to believe in it. All right, so those are the four reasons. Let's talk about each of these. Okay, calling people dumb. Okay, now he cites actual studies or the relationship between cognitive performance and belief in psychic abilities. There's some correlation. Okay, all right. This is insulting. Forget it. But just because it's insulting doesn't mean it isn't true. But let's go ahead. What is the supporting evidence for what this guy has to say? The only reason you would believe in this is: one, if you're dumb. Two, again, not direct quotes, so don't sue me. This is my interpretation. You're bad at math. Three, I gotta line it up. Find patterns in anything. Four, you want to believe in a fiction. Okay, all these things could be true, and my counter to that is this is not true and is not a useful debunk. Specifically because if you can prove that it happens even once, right? If you can demonstrate that something is happening, it doesn't matter if you're dumb, bad at math, find patterns in anything, and want to believe in a story. If you have scientific evidence that demonstrates a powerful correlation, basically, if you can rule out basically everything else except for telepathy beyond a reasonable doubt, then you have strong evidence that it exists, or it is at least one explanatory factor for that extra 9%. That's how you get to 34%. If you can demonstrate it, use actual science and study. You don't just say, well, humans have these tendencies, therefore, even looking into this is dumb. Again, this is a common thing you're going to see comes up over and over again. Appeals to authority, you're dumb. This is dumb. Don't even look at it. Why are we even considering this? You should feel bad, and you are bad for even thinking about this. We're going to just go ahead and discard that, and we're going to use actual scientific study instead. So that is not really a debunk of this. Now, let's look at people. Has anyone actually done follow-up studies? Have they reanalyzed these things and tried to find like reasons for why maybe the methods are bad? Maybe there's way are the people who are maybe there's only two studies and the two people have like a checkered past. They've lied before. I don't know. They've been caught stealing bubble gum from the, the gas station. Are there reasons why we shouldn't trust the authors of these studies? Are there reasons why their methods are terrible? Is their analysis terrible? So we're going to get into that. And first, we're going to play a little video by Dean Radin talking about a similar
I'm oscillating between, oh my.
experiment. This is him giving a sort of keynote speech, presenting some of his research, which is related to telepathy, but a different effect.
God, and wait, something must be wrong. And this, by the way, is pretty similar to the results, to the same feelings that we had when we were doing these experiments, because you don't often get results that are 5 sigma in any experiment, but it was showing up here. So the reason we kept doing replications is exactly the same sentiment that this physicist is saying. So he's going to visit us starting next week, and he'll remain for the month of May, and we'll go over in fine detail of his analysis and his methods to see whether he should be leaning towards, oh my God, or something must be wrong. What are other explanations for the results that we've been seeing in this? Well, first of all, maybe there's something idiosyncratic about the apparatus that we used. Well,
bad
we've
engineer.
Used 4 double-slit systems. We get pretty much the same result in all of them.
Again, this is a different test.
Vibration is always a problem when you're dealing with interferometers because it's extremely sensitive to vibration. Most of our...
But this is indicative of the level of rigor. By the way, Dean Radin is a scientist who has also done a lot of tests on telepathy. So this is the level of rigor that the very best are bringing. People in shielded chambers... Some of these tests are being done in Faraday cages, completely sound isolated. The participants are on completely different sides of the building, and they don't know each other. They're strangers. It is a double-blind test, meaning neither the researchers nor the participants know the correct answers ahead of time. They have been done using all the best ones are done using completely automated systems for picking the pictures. So is randomization a problem? They also randomize the order of the pictures, because there are human biases involved here. Okay, well, you know, I'm not going to bother writing down all these claims, but these are potential counterclaims. Which is basically that people are finding out somehow. So they're not getting vibration information. They're not getting electromagnetic information. They can't see it. They can't hear it. They're not likely to be colluding. These tests have been done... let me see here. Do-do-do-do-do. Twenty-eight labs, something like that, at least. Probably more since that claim was made. You can see that in one of these papers. 28 different laboratories. And at this point, tens of thousands of trials. What are the chances that they are all colluding? Highly unlikely. Okay? So they're probably not cheating. The participants aren't cheating. They have no incentive to cheat. In fact, doing any of this research at all goes against incentives. Because it is not well regarded. We're going to talk about that in just a moment here. But that is to say that the very best experiments control for basically everything. If you can't see, you can't hear the result, you don't know the person, you're not cheating, the people running the test aren't cheating, everything is perfectly randomized. And in fact, some of the randomization in some of these experiments, I can't verify that telepathy was done this way, but I do know for some of the other forced choice tests, they're using quantum number generators. So they're using quantum effects as basically the seed for the random generation. And so if you're claiming that either the engineering is bad, but they can be done, you're done many different times in many different labs. This is why you do independent verification. So the methods are airtight. Now they're not all airtight. As with every experiment, some are better than others. So maybe some of these meta-analysis are just have the garbage in, garbage out problem. Let's take a look at that. What does that mean? A meta-analysis is, let's say that 20 studies have been done, you know, the initial study and 19 replications. If we take them all as a big batch and we sort of look at all of their results and normalize and standardize them, what can we say based on this whole big group? Does this seem true or not, right? Do they conflict with each other? If you sort of average together and weigh all their results appropriately. Do we get a better picture of whether this is true or not? Right? That's sort of this is a useful tool. But one of the problems with those studies is, let's say that you have 18 replications that are all done by, just little podunk places that they skip a couple steps, or they've got crappy reporting, or they just have the people in the same room. There's a lot of potential problems there. Well, now you have a problem of 18 studies out of 20 are kind of crappy. So let's go take a look at that. Mm-hmm. could be flawed. So we actually just took a look at methods could be flawed. You tell me. I mean, use your own brain. If you can't see here, you can't even use electromagnetic radiation, you don't know them, you're not cheating, they're not cheating, or at least all the incentives and the number of replications would indicate that at least most of them aren't cheating. How could that be the case? How would you cheat? And why would you at this scale? I can think of no way. I can think of no way to cheat. Or to even like do it by accident, right? That doesn't make sense to me. You're basically just hand waving with no evidence if you think that the methods are flawed. I can think of no other way to control for extra variables that could explain this besides an effect like telepathy. Something unknown. All right, so let's go back to the meta-analysis. Let's say the meta-analysis is flawed. Maybe a bunch of those studies were trash, you know, and that sort of blew out the results and made it seem way more impressive than it really was. All right, so let's go take a look at that real quick. We've got two different kinds of meta-analysis to look at. So they go back and forth. There was that initial meta-analysis by Wiseman and the other person, and that has since been refuted, and the refutation has also been independently verified. You can read that in the sources. Losing my train of thought here. I can't remember where the other one is. There's another explanation of meta-analysis. Oh, here it is. All right, so this one is a more recent one, and this also looks into it, and they confirm the effects. Great. Okay, cool. So I can't remember how many this one looked at, but you can look at how they sourced them. And the reason that I really like this meta-analysis is that they responded to the prior analysis claims that, you know, what if you're just incorporating crappy quality studies, or you just got a bunch of studies with low sample sizes, right? Okay, yeah, you've got 50 studies that have two or three people in them, and one study that has 100. So, like, the 50 studies with two or three people are greatly outweighing, even though there's not that many people, so it's not that significant. So they control for all of those things, absolutely all of them. And you can look through all of this if you want to. But the gist is, they even went to the painstaking approach of looking through each and every one of those studies and having independent researchers look at just the papers for those studies, the methods, and then writing down, using a scoring system, how do we know, like, here's like an objective way of ranking how quality this study was. It's on a scale of like 0 to 7. Okay. Was it double blind? Were they like in the same, like, did they use soundproofing? Like all these sorts of things. Like you can read through it. What did they control for? All right, so they're taking all of the most common rebuttals and like, okay, fine. And in fact, if you go, so the evidence, basically, even when you throw out the crappiest air quote studies, which is a little unfair to say that they don't count for anything, but even if you're just super conservative, you still get a significant effect size. The p-values, depending on how you look at the individual studies, range from 0.005 to 0.0001. What's that, 3 sigma? Overall, the p-value is more than 6 sigma. By the way, this is just odds against chance. So if you were to guess, every now and then, you're not. If I were to say you were to flip a coin heads or tails, and you were to guess, and you got it right a few times in a row, that is not that surprising. Every now and then, it's not going to be exactly 50-50. You do it 100 times, it's not going to be exactly 50-50. Usually, it's going to be a little bit different. So statistically, it's possible to get 100 heads. It's extremely unlikely. But just by random chance, sometimes you're going to get impressive results on anything. So the p-value is a way of measuring, if you were to just do this by chance, how often would you expect to get this result accidentally, just by random chance? So the p-values basically say there is a a greater than a trillion in one chance that you would not get this. Right? Or it'd take more than a trillion to one. You could run this test a trillion times, and you might only get this set of results one time. It's a long way of saying, yo, it didn't happen by accident. There is an explanatory factor here. Something happened. You don't have to say it's telepathy, but something happened. So we know it's not garbage in, and we know it's not bad weighting of the studies. We know that something happened. Well, there is another kind of analysis that is often brought up as a debunk, and that is Bayesian analysis. I don't want to go into all this because it's kind of boring. But I want to have some rigor here. It's a different kind of analysis than statistical significance or p-values. It's basically saying, rather than saying, what are the odds that this would happen by accident running this test? It is, okay, what do you believe beforehand? There's two hypotheses in this case. Either telepathy is real and it's the explanation for this effect, or telepathy is not real and nothing is going to happen, right? There's a lot of ways to frame this. What odds do you give it, right? These are like betting odds, basically. What odds do you think this is true before and after? It's a way to document your bias, but also a way to update your beliefs in a relative way. So instead of saying whether this should happen randomly, what are the chances this happens randomly or not, you tell me how likely you think this is. Like, do you think this is real or not real? And what odds do you give it? Let's say that you give it like a 2% chance that telepathy is real. Or give it a 1 in 1,000,000 chance that telepathy is real. And those are the odds you're coming in with. Given the results you get, now go run the tests. Now, given these results, it's a mathematical way of saying, how should you update your odds that this is real? So rather than this is true or not true, it's like a gradient. It's like a smooth. It's all gray. Rather than saying everything is true or not true, forcing a decision, how much more should you believe that this is true? Or how much less should you believe this is true? And various Bayesian analysis come up with lots of different numbers, but I picked one that I liked because at the very end, these researchers, the authors of this meta-analysis, say that this is dumb. We don't think ESP is real. All right, so you already know that their bias is to say that we reviewed the ESP claim specifically. Again, I'm talking about this because this is analogous to telepathy. But when they do a meta-analysis of ESP-related tests, first, even after all this, they still think it's dumb. Their Bayesian analysis shows that you should update your beliefs. The Bayes factor is 40 to 1, meaning, okay, if you came in not believing the ESP was real, the ability to guess what something is, you know, just by yourself. This is without somebody else helping you, which is what telepathy is. Somebody sending you the thought. This is just guessing by yourself. On the ESP test, the Bayes factor ended up being 40 to 1 on their meta-analysis of all these various tests, experiments. Meaning, if you came in believing that this was dumb and not real, you should decrease that belief by 40 times. Or another way of saying is you should believe it is real 40 times more than you actually do now. If you did believe it was real, you should increase how much you believe it's real by 40 times. So this is pretty slam dunk. These people thought it was dumb, and they still left in the most conservative fashion saying, it's like 40 times more real than we should. These results lead us to believe that it is 40 times more real than we came in believing it was. However, amusingly, they still leave thinking it's dumb, but why? You know, okay. So we've ruled out a lot of, we're going to leave the world of statistics and meta-analysis behind. You can look into all my sources if you want. So when people say, yes, this has been debunked, it's very dismissive, as if science were not an iterative process, while missing the fact that all of these researchers have replied. Additional researchers have come in and verified that work. So it's very dismissive. And then they walk away. This is the trend every single time in all psi research, whether it's telepathy or anything else. It's like people make an outrageous claim. People look at it. They find a small flaw or potential issue. This is dumb. Here's why. And then they walk away. And those researchers bend over backwards to control for absolutely everything. They have other labs independently verify it. They do reanalysis of everything. And then it's crickets. Nobody cares. Nobody comes back because I heard that was debunked. Like, well, that's not how science works. There's a back and forth here. And so it's come back and crickets. Nobody has responded. So let's take a look at some other evidence. By the way, I can shorthand all of this. This is just a good episode. I recommend this. Let's take a look at this interview with... We're going to appeal to authority for a second, even though I hate it. Whoa! Advertising. Go away.
That's a scientific program.
This is an interview. This is an interview with Jessica Utz. She's a professor of the professor and chair of the Department of Statistics at the University of California, Irvine, and she was the president of the American Statistical Association in 2017. That is, I wrote this down from elsewhere. That is the world's largest association of professional statisticians since 1839, which exists to, and I quote, promote sound statistical practice. These are a bunch of professional bean counters, number nerds. Like, so you don't get to be the president of the professional number nerds unless you know some things about statistics. So anyone who's claiming that statistics is not the reason that this isn't true is because they didn't understand math. We're going to come back to that one. Here's what Jessica Utz has to say.
What did you find? I mean, do people have psychic ability? Were you able to show that from the research that you did?
My bottom line is, if we were to treat this area like we treat other areas of science, we would be totally convinced that psychic abilities are real. There's so much evidence out there. The statistical evidence, you know, we look at things that are called p-values.
We're not going to get into it. So there you have it. You want to appeal to authority. There you have it. Jessica Utz says so. Okay. I'm not even going to bother writing down appeals to authority, but if you want to listen to other people's appeals to authority, here's mine. We'll just go back and forth with that. Let's take a look at some other evidence. Ignore all of that. In my opinion, the scientific evidence when you're just doing forced choice tests is overwhelming. 34% chance under the right conditions that any person can guess the right answer, which shouldn't be possible. How else can we demonstrate this effect? Because ultimately, not very many people are going to be moved by, oh, wow, you barely beat the odds. Like, it's all very abstract. It doesn't feel real. How can you show this in everyday life? So let's take a look. So let's go back here. Whoop, whoop. How else? All right. So this experiment is fun. So somebody named Rupert Sheldrake did an experiment to follow up on pets who knew that their owner was coming home before their owner came home. Basically, they would go wait by the door. This started because he noticed that a woman named Pam Smart noticed that her dog was always waiting for her by the door when she came home. And in fact, the dog knew that somebody was coming home even before they had any, like, obvious physical evidence that somebody was coming home. And this is another thing that's easy to dismiss. Like, okay, this is silly. There's a lot of reasons you might know the dog was coming home. People come home at the same time every day. You know, we've got our routines, blah, blah, blah. But he followed up on this. I love people like this, man. Have a little curiosity. Don't just dismiss things. So he followed up on some dog owners. And so I have a quick video to show you this specific person, Pam Smart. Okay. So they tested it. So let's take a look here.
Die Kamera zeigt die aktuelle Uhrzeit. Es ist 14.50 Uhr Minuten und 7 Sekunden.
Those of you without visuals, Pam is, they sent her out, so they just used the live footage of her dog. Oh, what's her dog's name? We gotta, what's her dog's name? JT. Ooh, that's such a good name. JT is sitting at home with, I think, Pam's mom. And so they have a camera running. And they had Pam leave to just go out on basically a fake, you know, afternoon lunch date with a friend or something. And then come back home so that they could measure. Right, does the dog seem to indicate that they know, she knows when she's, it knows when she's coming home? All right, they're still talking at the park. JT's chilling. Oh, okay. So the producers say, okay, Pam, now get up and decide to go home.
Um 14 Uhr, 50 Minuten und
11 seconds later, JT walks to the door and stares at the window and waits patiently. Like I said, they say the experiment was successful. What you don't see here is the number of variations that Rupert Sheldrake did with various dog owners who also made these claims. What they did is they used an automated system, like a random number generator, to decide when people, so they created these fake setups where, okay, when you leave the house, my computer will tell you when to come back at a random time, and you're going to come back. So it was to break any pattern. They also used different taxis every time so that the dog couldn't just notice like the sounds of familiar engines approaching. They controlled for a lot of factors. So the paper's here. And of course they, the punchline is that yes, they found, that the animals did seem to respond. So JT was at the window only 4% of the time when she was gone and 55% of the time when she was returning. I think it, what's fascinating is that if the owner would decide to come home, their dog would go to the window or door and wait and, you know, seem to be excited, which again only happens 4% of the time when they're gone. But if the owner like got held up with something or some life event came up and they had to, they weren't going to go home, they had to take a detour, their dog would give up and go back and do something else. And as soon as they were about to go back home again, the dog would go back to the window or door. It's like they knew, like, ah, all right, you're not coming home. Never mind. Somehow it knew. I just think that that one is fun. I think it's interesting evidence from a different approach. So this would imply telepathy between animals and humans. So I had some other stuff in here that were about statistics and why there's a statistical rebuttals to why this is not the case. It's dumb. I feel this has been adequately disproven, in my opinion. I don't need to go into it any further. So we did the dog one. That's fun. So let's take a, we're going to wrap this up a little bit, and then we're going to get into some more interesting stuff. What have I not covered? I've covered basically everything. We've controlled for human biases. We've controlled for, I didn't talk about how the standard like forced choice test videos or pictures are chosen or symbols if they use them, but many of them are chosen, are borrowed from other areas of psychology. Like these are standardized video and image sets. But you can investigate any of the studies in this meta-analysis if you want to do it yourself. I'm going to save you some time and let you know that this is not a factor. That would be a problem if, like, it turns out humans have a bias for picking circles, and so they disproportionately picked circles, and for some reason that threw off the results. This is not a problem. Okay, the only other one we didn't talk about was the file drawer effect. I'm not going to get into that, but basically it's the... I mean, this is a real issue in science, is that when you have a null hypothesis, or sorry, you get null results, you think something is going to happen, but nothing happens, so you decide not to publish it because it's boring and it doesn't help you, right? You can't publish like 50 papers that all say, actually nothing happened, and one where something did. So there is an incentive for a scientist to just put it in the file drawer, right? They just bury it, like, okay, nothing happened. So they're saying the potential problem here is that we could have a large amount of studies where people ran telepathy studies and came up with nothing. So they just decided, well, I'm not going to show everyone I did a telepathy study, which has a bunch of stigma against it. I'm not going to risk losing, not getting tenure because I didn't even demonstrate anything. So I'm going to bury this. I'm only going to show my good stuff and not the stuff that is contrarian to my claims. That's called the file drawer effect. What if hypothetically there's a bunch of theoretical buried studies that people never published that show exactly the opposite or that nothing happened? But you can, using statistics, you can basically calculate, okay, using a worst case scenario of what these studies might show, how many studies that are hypothetically hidden out there would it take in order to counteract the claims that we know we have? Again, these are just theoretical. You're just assuming that this many exists. And the answer is above 500 studies, depending on which meta-analysis you look at. It's about an 8-to-1 ratio, meaning that 8 times as many negative or null results would need to exist that were never published of the same level of rigor, right, and quantity that show exactly the opposite or, you know, no result to counteract our claims. So you'd have to have 8 times as many that just got buried, and that is well above the average for basically anything. Like, this is beyond the norms that have been measured in other areas. So I can't back up. I actually don't know what the numbers are. I just read that that was far above, you know, what is expected. So this is not likely to be a problem. But by all means, you're welcome to go door to door and talk to all researchers and ask if they've got any. And, you know, some people have done like spot analysis of this to try to get at, okay, how many do you have? How many do you know about? How many have you heard about running? So just to sort of get a feel for it. And to my knowledge, nothing exciting came of that. So we're left with, it's weak, it's prevalent, just about everyone human can do it. It's kind of boring. Let's be honest. Oh, wow, telepathy is real, but it seems kind of hard. The effect seems pretty weak. That's weird. Or whatever the explanatory phenomenon for how this is possible. I mean, it does seem kind of cool, but it's not very repeatable. It seems pretty noisy. You know, maybe we should look into it some more, but that's not exactly sexy. You know, I have another thread that I'm not going to bother following here, which is basically, you know, there hasn't been enough study, or if this was real, I would know about it, or this is a fringe topic, so we shouldn't pay attention to it. I'm not going to go into those right now, but the gist is that, you know, Dean Radin cites in that article, 20 of approximately 1,000 psychology departments worldwide have one or more faculty members seriously studying psi. So that's less than about 2% of academia in terms of by department has anyone even looking into this at all. So no, there's not a lot of people studying it. So it is fringe for sure, but that doesn't mean it's wrong. By definition, everything that is paradigm shifting was at once a fringe topic and against the mainstream. That's just how it works. They're not all wrong. Most of them are, let's be honest. But every now and then, it's also true that the most interesting stuff tends to come from the fringe, in my opinion. And that is just straight opinion. So we're not going to get into the details there, but okay, if it were real, you would have heard about it, or you would have known. I really don't know what to say to that other than you probably have experienced this. You just didn't chalk it up to telepathy, or you wrote it off. But when everybody thinks something is dumb, nobody talks about it, nobody takes it seriously, you can see how a stigma weighs on a culture, and you know how powerful norms can be. And I think we've run a little amok with our material interpretation of the world, a very physicalist point of view. So we're going to start hinting at what does this all mean? If we take it at its word that telepathy is real, what does this mean? I'll call it materialism isn't true. Isn't the full story. Meaning, or physicalism, however you want to frame it, but basically that the entire universe is made out of atoms and energy, and there's nothing else. Consciousness, all, anything and everything. Thoughts, feelings, cars, people, lightning bolts, everything can be explained by atoms and energy interacting. It's just physics. Like, there's nothing else, it's all physics, and everything derives from that. Yes, it's all pretty weird that it happens this way, but ultimately everything can be explained by the interaction of atoms and energy. And that's all there is. Well, that would indicate that that is probably not true. We can't say it's entirely not true. Maybe there is some sort of weird electromagnetic wave, or maybe there's another field, like gravity. And materialism could still encompass that. I don't think that's true, and you're going to find out why. But in my opinion, that is one implication. All right, so people would know about this if this were true. Yes, in fact, if this were just a regular human ability, you would expect for this to have shown up throughout history. And guess what? It does. We just thought they were all stupid or didn't take it seriously. So this is a great book, Mind-Matter Interaction. Only some of it is on telepathy. The rest of it's on other psi stuff. And it's basically just historical accounts, many of which are very no-nonsense. Like, these are just like logs of stuff that happened. And, you know, some of it is more hearsay, some of it is more myth. But they're just, okay, if we say that this is true, we should be able to go back throughout history and see evidence that people are using telepathy or things like it. And do we see any evidence of that? And the answer is yes. There are historical accounts of these things. I'm not going to read them, but they're in there. You can read that book. It's awesome. Okay, what else? Let's take a look at the Yoga Sutras. So this is essentially... you can think of it as like an instruction manual for yogis to teach yoga. Yoga being not just like stretching and bending. That's just like one part of it. It is basically a guidebook to, you know, reducing suffering. Very like complementary to Buddhism. It is like a practical, philosophical like approach to life, but also it's just like a set of things that you practice. The entire thing is like meant to be memorized basically for teachers to teach other people. All right, here's how you meditate. Here's how you stretch. Here's how you breathe. Here are the things that exist. Here's how your five senses work. Like, it's all pretty just like direct and no nonsense. For the most part, all right, it's do this, do this, do this, and then eventually you'll reach enlightenment, right? It's like, here's how to be happy. Yeah, here's how to be healthy. Like, do these, don't do that. And why? It was very straightforward. And it's completely serious. Like, it's not abstract or maybe a little abstract, but it's not metaphorical. It means what it says. Now, whether you believe what it says or not is a different thing, right? There are a lot of old texts, especially religious texts, that mean what they say. But often it is metaphor. It is meant like a parable. It's a story. This is not a story. This is not how this is written. That's not what they're for. So the volumes of the Yoga Sutras, they're all pretty straightforward like that. Like, it's not... it's just, here, do this. Do that stretch. Don't lie. It's instructions. Then you get to the third volume. And the third volume... The third volume's a real trip. The third volume of the Yoga Sutras explains basically paranormal phenomena and so-called latent human abilities, psychic powers. But it just describes them offhand. It's just like, all right, here's what you do. Do this, do this, do this, and then this will happen. And what's interesting is the way it describes these effects is, and telepathy is mentioned, is more or less the punchline of the third volume here is, all right, so this is how you do these things. We're telling you not because we want you to do them, but they're basically just a distraction. Don't pay attention to this. Like, for the most part, keep meditating, like keep focusing on, you know, being enlightened and freeing yourself from worldly suffering and being a good person, like that sort of thing. Don't be distracted by these sort of superpowers, because they're going to show up. As you start getting really good at this stuff, they're going to show up. And just so you don't freak out, here are the conditions under which they will happen. You know, play around with it, have fun, but don't get sidetracked. That's the entire tone of this section, is not only is this real, but like, it's a warning to just like, don't mess around with this too much. Like, here's how it works, just so you know. So you're not like freaking out. They describe a great deal of abilities. There are historical accounts of many of these things. We're not doing like a general Psi video now. Here's what they had to say in Yoga Sutra, or the Sutra 319. How can you do telepathy? You can do telepathy by focusing on the knowledge of other minds, or on the ideas or knowledge of others. Right? That's more or less the translation. If you focus really hard on what other people are thinking, or on ideas and their mind, you can basically send and receive information. You just focus really hard. It's a process called samyama. I'm not going to go into the details, but it is essentially a meditative trance/focus where you just like laser focus on just one idea or one thing. So in theory, you could just stare at somebody's head or just think about them. And in fact, there were other studies done, I think also by Sheldrake, which are, realize that somebody else is thinking of them, or do the people realize that somebody else is staring at them? He's done a lot of studies like that. If you've ever had the phenomena of like, oh, I'm going to give somebody a call. You call them and they're like, I was just thinking about you. In theory, that is explained by telepathy. Now, of course, there are other mundane explanations for a lot of these everyday occurrences, but if we are buying that there is statistical evidence that this effect exists, you would expect, again, to see it in real life. So do you see it in the real world? And the answer is, I mean, yeah. Could those things be something else? Of course they could. But if we don't see anything in the real world elsewhere, that would be sort of a sign that maybe this isn't a real thing, you know? All right, so over there. All right, so we have evidence. So all of that is consistent, right? So if we didn't see it, that would be evidenced again. Now, just because we do see it, that's not conclusive. That doesn't mean that it did happen. There's a lot of things that people say or do throughout history or in everyday life, and that's not like great evidence. It's just testimonial evidence. But if you didn't see it, that would be a problem. Okay, so we're going to wrap this up here. Summary here is telepathy seems to exist. No matter whether you're coming at this from a highly controlled, scientifically rigorous, experiment-driven approach, or you're coming about this from a sort of everyday life events, or you're looking at this historically, or you're looking at this through the lens of spirituality or religious teachings, they're all consistent with telepathy existing and abilities like it existing. That is, communication of thoughts or ideas over a distance from one mind to another. And to be clear, like based on what we saw with the bets, and there are other accounts that are really fun between like birds and other animals as well. They seem to demonstrate that animals can talk to each other. They can talk to you. And any pet owner maybe kind of gets this a little bit. Maybe you don't believe it, or some part of you doesn't want to believe it. But it's entirely possible that you kind of know what your dog wants. But how is that possible? Is it body language? Is it? Is it facial expressions? Or is it just a sense? Is it just a sort of intuitive feeling? And that is often how this is described, is that it is just a knowing. It's not like a ding. It's not like, it doesn't feel different. It feels like regular life, because if it is real, if telepathy is the explanation behind this 34%, behind these effects, is that everyone's doing it all the time, we just don't realize it. And we're probably not very good at it because we don't think about it, we don't practice it. Could we be better at it if we practiced it? But it would feel like something rather mundane or explainable, because it should feel familiar. So it's sort of hiding in plain sight, if that were the case, which is interesting. And it can be practiced, and we need to learn a lot more about it. Even if you think, I've seen all this evidence, I think that this is dumb, there must be some other cause, there must be something else that we don't understand. Well, the onus is on those people to provide a valid hypothesis. You know how many I've seen in multiple years of like reviewing like relevant like psi research and all these things, hyperfixation? I haven't seen a single valid theory for what else explains this. Is it a new explanation for how the universe works? Well, cool. To me, that's like even crazier. Like, that's even more wild and out there. Like, I haven't seen a single hypothesis that is plausible and less crazy, again, to apply Occam's razor, which I do very, like, cautiously. This is actually the simplest explanation. Once you've ruled everything else out, I think it's happening. It's happening. Our minds are connected or can be connected somehow, directly. We don't know how, but we should really find out, because that is crazy. It's crazy, crazy that our minds are connected, directly connected, despite space and time. We haven't even gotten into the crazy stuff. This is like, we're scratching the surface. But all of this, you could be left feeling it's rather unsatisfying. Okay, every now and then we can maybe send an errant thought to our pet, or like, I can guess a thing randomly, slightly more accurate sometimes. It's sort of a snooze alert. Like, this isn't like, you're not shooting fireballs here, you're not flying around, you're not like coming up with winning lottery numbers. So, what relevance does this have to my everyday life? Well, you're right. I mean, 34% over 25% is cool. It's definitely impressive, and it has a lot of implications for how we communicate with each other. What if we could get better at it? What if we could talk to each other? What if we could communicate mind to mind? Like, what are the potential applications of this? I don't know. I would love to find out. Is it explainable by some other really bizarre effect? It is an anomaly. Something weird is definitely happening. Now, can it be? Is it some new field like gravity or something that we just didn't know about? I don't know. Can you send information through it? I don't know. Let's find out. Because something is definitely happening, and we're definitely able to do it intentionally. We're not very good at it, though. So I can see why, you know, people aren't quitting their day job and like, oh, I'm going to go practice telepathy now. Because it's kind of weak. It's sort of hard to repeat. And that's very unsatisfying. And honestly, it doesn't capture people's hearts and minds. Because it's not sensational. It's not obvious. It's not in your face. Okay, my dog knew I was coming home, but like, it could have been something else. Like, we have a lot of self-doubt. And we are not, despite what anyone says, we are not purely logical creatures. We're very intuitive, emotional, experiential creatures. We have to feel something, see something. We need to see and do it, and it needs to be obvious before we really, like, believe something deep down. So I can see why these sorts of results and explanations are not satisfying. But what if there were people who could do it, telepathy, and they could do it not just 34% of the time getting the right answer? What if they could do it 100% of the time? On command, every single time, no matter how many tests you run, over and over and over again. And what if it wasn't just like random oddballs, people on the far right side of some like genetic psychic bell curve? Like, I don't know. Like, if we don't even know what the potential like factors are. Well, okay, we do know some of the potential factors. That's in this book, Mind Matter Interaction. We do have some understanding of what affects your ability to be good at this. And some of it you can change, some of it you can't. Spoiler, it's like every other skill. So think about basketball. It's basically the same. There are genetic factors, there are skill factors, there's knowledge factors, all that. It all comes into play. But what if there was a group of people, and not just like random, inexplicable oddballs, like throughout history, which again are listed in historical accounts. Well, this one person seemed to be really good at it in 1912. Nobody can explain why. Well, that's cool, but it doesn't really teach us anything. What if there was a consistent group of the population that could do this over and over and over again? And it's not a small group. And they could get it right every single time, no matter how you put this. And they could do it in front of your face. Would you find that convincing? Well, congratulations, because they exist. So, in my opinion, and we've taken a little over an hour to get to this point, every living human being needs to go listen to the Telepathy Tapes podcast. I have no affiliation with this podcast. So there you go, thetelepathytapes.com. It is utterly mind-blowing, and I don't want to spoil it. I had done quite a lot of research into Psi before discovering this, but I found that this was an absolute slam dunk, because I, too, was left with the feeling that, okay, cool, like, there is a small but real effect happening here, but it's sort of hard to repeat, it's kind of weak. I'm not, like, floating object, I'm not closing doors with my mind with force powers or anything, so... kind of who cares? It's like, it's neat, but it's a bit of a shrug. Like, we should definitely learn more. Maybe we can get better at it, but it's not like highly relevant. Until I heard about this podcast, and a subsequent documentary, hopefully they're going to be making it. This podcast is about non-speaking, severely autistic people. And as it turns out, as a general rule, most, if not all of them, have the capacity to do telepathy on command. That is, sending information from one mind to another. And I'm not going to just listen to the podcast. It will melt your mind. And it is much more narrative-driven. It's much more exciting. So let's take a look at some of the footage that they've done. So that's the claim, is that severely autistic non-speakers, pretty much as a rule, have the ability to do this. And the claim is that thousands of their caretakers, that is their teachers, their parents, anyone who works with these kids or adults, it's sort of becoming an open secret, or has been an open secret, that they seem to know what you're thinking, and they seem to be able, some of them seem to be able to communicate with regular, non-neurodiverse people with their own minds. They know what you're thinking. They know where you've hidden the candy. They know the answer to things. They know when you're hiding things from them. They know when you have a secret that you're not telling them. They know where you are and what you're thinking about, or who you're thinking about. That's the experience of these people. Again, not as a rule. And a lot of them write it off. And what's changed is that these non-speakers, teaching them how to spell, that is, to use a letter board to point out. You think of like Stephen Hawking using his chair to sort of spell out words. This is a similar process. Because their motor function and just emotional and bodily control is so hard for them. For a long time, people thought that these people were dumb. They thought that they were incompetent, that there was no one in there. Like, they were just... for lack of a better word, they thought they're basically brain dead, more or less. As it turns out, there's absolutely somebody in there, and we have been babying them for decades. And to me, that is just, that's a whole nother thread and just like horrifying. But they're in there. And what's changed is now we are popularizing the ability for them to speak to us in a way that we understand, using words, and they can spell them out. So they can spell out what they're trying to say. So that is the invention, air quotes, and that has been proliferating. And because it's been proliferating, these caretakers, the parents, the teachers, they're all saying the same things over and over and over again. I think they can read my mind. I think they're trying to talk to me, but not with words. And every single one of them who comes forward with these stories is saying, my students are all talking to each other in their heads. I don't know how, but they seem to be talking to each other in their heads. They know things that they shouldn't be able to know over and over and over again. So let's take it. So a few researchers, like Dean Radin, many others, this follows one particular researcher who has been working with this group of people for a long time. And it's kind of a sad story because she basically gets kicked out of her position as a professor for making these claims and to look into this issue. But she decided that it was so important that she was going to do it anyway. So this follows a lot of the people and kids that she has been testing. And so here's a video of one of the tests. So what you're going to see here is an autistic man named Houston, and they are testing him. They test him in lots of different ways. In this case, what they're doing is, this is the researcher. I wish I had looked up her name. I apologize. But she's in the test. Connolly? Something like that. I can't remember. Jennifer? I can't remember exactly. I'm sorry. She's just holding up Uno cards, and his mom is looking at the Uno cards. So the way this works, the claim is that Houston can experience basically seeing through his mom's eyes, right? It's more than just thinking. It is, he can experience some of what somebody else is experiencing deliberately. So what you don't see in the setup of this test is there are no reflective surfaces in front of him. They really go to severe lengths, just like in the other telepathy tests, to make it impossible that this person could be cheating. So he's like staring off into nothing right now. And that's why his mom looks at the cards, is because Houston is getting the information through her. And in fact, if you remove his mom and his mom doesn't look, he can't guess correctly anymore. All right, so let's take a look. Enough talk. He just has to guess the Uno cards.
Don't worry about color. Okay, go ahead.
Two.
Good.
Four.
Good.
One.
He can't see the cards.
Nine.
Well, not with his eyeballs.
Seven.
Look at him.
Three.
It's not even hard. They don't get them wrong.
One.
The people.
Further towards us? No, don't. Don't
sure.
Use that one.
A little bit more towards you? Okay.
Yeah, a little towards us. Sorry.
Okay. Are we ready?
Plus.
He gets the plus.
Two.
They can do this when they're in it. So the reason they're always next to each other is because most of these autistic individuals, they need like physical touch to feel grounded in their bodies. They get very uncomfortable when they're in a group of strangers with cameras and bright lights pointed at them. So they often have their person next to them or near them. But they do... You can go on the website. They have tests where the person is in the other room. They have tests where the person is under a blanket. And they can still do this. They can do this with pictures. They can do this with numbers and math, anything. It is insane. And they get it right every single time. 100%. You tell me how that works, except for mind reading. It's telepathy. It's real. It exists. And we have the outlier population now to demonstrate it. And this hasn't broken into the mainstream consciousness yet, but it will. It will. And you heard it here first. So go watch the telepathy tapes or listen to it. It's a mind blower. This is just scratching the surface. There's many people who can do this. Again, it's like an open secret. So now we have our outlier population that is not only can do this, produce this effect reliably. And I am so excited to see like scrutiny brought to some immense like testing. Because if you can do something every time under a controlled circumstance, if science ignores that, I mean, we should probably just lose all faith in our ability to do science. What are we doing? So that's a wrap on telepathy. And my final claim here is that it's real. Anyone can do it. It seems like animals can probably do it. It seems like there are factors that contribute to success. There are definitely factors that contribute to it not working. We didn't go into those. But we're going to probably do more videos on different kinds of psi in the future. And that it is profound. And that it is a lot more complicated than just the sending of some basic information. It is like a shared experience. That's the claim from these autistic people. It's weird. It is a small thing. 9%, 34%, you know? It's such a small thing that changes everything. And that's what this represents. Telepathy is real. It's blowing my mind that appears to be the case, but to say otherwise is to not take the evidence seriously. I'm open to arguments to the contrary, but in my opinion, anyone who is dismissive of this hasn't looked into it lately, isn't paying attention to the results, and they also think that a single disproof, a single attempt at a debunk, oh, I found a reason. You guys didn't control for this thing in that study. And, oh, if you look at this obscure statistical approach, it says that it could be maybe nothing. Or if you look at these other, the people who did this meta-analysis, the Bayesian ones. I didn't even go into this. We think it's not true because, here we go. Okay, so they worried about the file drawer effect, which we already talked about. That has already been, to my satisfaction, demonstrated to not be a significant effect. It's not a concern. But the real problem here is that ESP seems to contradict well-substantiated theories in physics and biology. The reason we think that it's, even though our own analysis, our own objective analysis of what's happening, shows a very strong reason to update our beliefs and to think that this is real. We still don't believe it because it doesn't make sense, because it doesn't jive with what we already know about the world. That's it. Because we can't explain it, it's not real. La 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 la. Because I can't explain why it's happening, so it's not happening. Shh, it's not happening. And I will say that it could be some other really weird effect. Maybe we're living in a simulation and this is just some weird byproduct of that. But that doesn't, I still feel like what is being described by firsthand accounts of people who are doing it sounds like telepathy. The results sound like telepathy. You know, how you do it is how you would expect telepathy to be done, or at least, you know, in popular culture, or like this is the explanation for the phenomenon. So if everything fits, it just seems like, okay, yes, asterisk. We're going to say that telepathy is real and seems to be the reason this is happening. However, you know, there could be other ideas, other hypotheses that are really weird as to how this is all working. And I think that's great. I would love to have those things explored. But I also think that whatever you get out of that, the explanation is going to be way crazier than telepathy. You're going to have some bizarre hypotheses. Because that's all that's left, is crazy things. It's definitely happening. Only crazy things seem to be the explanation. The least crazy of them, and the one that fits the models best, the explanation, the measured results, is that telepathy is real. Anyone can do it. It can be practiced. We can get better at it. And we should learn a lot more about it. Because the world is crazier than we thought. But we are just now beginning to unravel it. Until next time.